heart and soul of a nation, beckons the call. The voice of our forefathers heard in the distance.
A house divided against itself cannot stand.
To reclaim our honor.
Our soul. The challenges of a generation call out. Future generations hang in the balance. We choose liberty. This is the voice of a nation. And now, Malcolm.
Let the silent voices be heard. It's a let voices be heard. That's let's hear opinions on all sides of the conversation. That's the way we want to do it here, is bring it all out. And how do we get anywhere, people, if we don't talk about the issues or the challenge or even the opportunities for that matter? Well, good news is we started a new program just recently called Hashtag My Voice. Now, Hashtag My Voice works on any social media. It works on anything. You can use hashtags on Facebook, on Pinterest, on LinkedIn, or the new ones, Poller, Gab, Codius. They all use hashtags. And it's a way to group your thoughts together and your ideas and share them with like-minded people. All right. So today is Hashtag My Voice Will Be Heard. This is round two. We have four very interesting guests joining us today and four, well, really newsworthy topics, folks. I mean, white supremacy is in the news. Violent entertainment is in the news. Censorship is another problem. And then an ultimate confrontation. Some people even call it a potential another civil war. Where are we headed as a nation? That is the question always, right? I'd like to bring on first and talk about the first topic here. Brooke Says is here. Brooke is an activist. She's a patriot, strategic communications analyst, and cultural impact specialist. Brooke, let's talk about what's on your mind, what's in your heart today.
Well, I know that I chose the subject of white supremacy because it's obviously big in the news with the Democrats claiming that Trump is a white supremacist, that the El Paso shooter was a white supremacist, and all the deplorables are white supremacists. And my vanilla ice cream in the freezer is also white supremacist, by the way.
Is that vanilla bean, you mean?
Yes.
Okay. Well, you sometimes you got to try fudge ripple love. You know, that can work as well, right? All right. So the white supremacy, you think it's gone too far?
Yes, I think it's gone too far. And I believe, you know, I watch culture. I believe that it will produce a backlash. And I believe it already has produced a backlash. First of all, I don't think the Democrats understand that they actually do have white voters that probably are sick of hearing this crap, right. But also there is an ever-growing black and Hispanic Trump-supporting coalition.
Why do you think the left is using white supremacy as much as they're using it right now? Why are they doing it?
I believe polling is showing, they're never going to say it out loud, I believe polling is showing they know that they are losing a contingent of the black vote. And that's what they've used historically to gin the base up. They get 85 to 95% of the black vote. They have to have that to win. That's why they're talking reparations. That's why they're talking white supremacy. It happens every 2 years and every 4 years anyways, but that's the reason.
All right. So the premise that Brooke puts out there is that they believe they're losing the vote, specifically, Brooke says, the black vote. Arnetta, what do you think the truth to that is? Do you think, I mean, because people are really wondering, why are they going to this extreme right now? And she points out, well, there is a reason. And the reparations is an interesting thing, too. What do you think about that?
I think she's totally correct. It's also tied into immigration because they couldn't get away with he's racist. So now it's the white supremacists, and white supremacists are naturally, as they think, racist. So they used the rhetoric about his saying immigration, we have to close the border, as that he hates Latinos and he hates blacks. So they're doing that to turn their base, to keep their base all turned up and voting Democrat.
Bob, do you think that that Americans are onto this? I'm talking middle America now. Are they onto this?
Oh, I'd say for sure. There's definitely a huge swath of the population that's, they just smell it. They know it's there. it's obvious. They have nothing else against Donald Trump. You know, Mueller's report came out and things were slowly, you know, heating up with the investigations being whispered about, but not on MSM, but between, like, say, us. So they've got to try other ways to change the narrative. And, you know, that exactly, it went from racist to now it's a white supremacist thing. And it's totally bogus. These both the shooters, their profiles were changed on their social medias. Their posts were actually caught and screenshotted and saved for, you know, all eternity. We know these people were liberals, and questionable whether they have mental issues or not, you know. But the main person, working class, they're starting to get really antsy. I mean, it's just never, never ending. It's one thing after another. Throw it against the wall, see if it sticks.
Yeah, yeah. Bob, when you say something, I got to ask you, when you say there might be, they may or may not have a mental disorder, I kind of disagree with that, because let me say this to you. Anybody that goes out and murders that many people in any kind of a venue cannot be all there, buddy. They've got to have a mental problem. No?
Yeah. And you get the loner types. I saw an article earlier that there's, you know, so many boys and young men that have no father figure.
That's right.
And those are the perfect people that are ripe for the picking for these Antifa groups and the white supremacists. Well, I mean, I don't like either of them, we're definitely not part of them.
That's right. That's right. Let me bring Carl into the conversation. And Carl, here's the problem is with what Bob says. It's really good points here. The extremists have the conversation, both the left, the far left, and the far right, which is, in this case, let's use the props of, Antifa on one side, and then the white supremacy, or some people would even say the KKK on the other side. They seem to get all the attention, not middle America, not reasonably decent people. And maybe that's the reason the left is panicking, because a lot of those people now, in fact, let's bring that one step further, Carl. It's a fact that in the last many days, this past week, President Trump's numbers are rising. They're actually going upward. They're ticking upward. Do you think that has them a little nervous?
Oh, absolutely. I think it has them all nervous. There's people that just are sick of it. They're sick and tired of hearing it. They're sick and tired of hearing the race word. They've misdefined it. There's many, many people of color that are now supporting President Trump because they're saying this is just ridiculous, you know, that everyone's using that racism word. And there's one thing that I think we forgot about here is not only is it saying against black people or people of color, because there's also the mixed couples. There's many, many, many mixed couples now in this country. Mm-hmm. So who are they going to vote for? Wow. You know, if President Trump, they're claiming that he's this big racist, and you're a white woman married to a black man, or a white man married to a black woman, then who are you going to support when all of that side of the family is screaming racism, racism, we hate Trump? Who are you going to support in that case?
Carl, that is, or you really make me think with that statement. I hadn't thought of it in those terms, quite honestly. But you know, you're right. America has changed a lot in the last 50 years. At one time, you remember 50 years ago, if there was a black man and a white woman, or a white woman and a black man, people would look and stare and wonder what that, right? That was a thing at one point,
absolutely,
right? Yeah. Now it's not at all a thing. I mean, we don't really care. I mean, it is what it is. So we're a multiracial country. We're multiracial. We're diverse. We're a diverse nation. And so you just point out that there's a good part of the population. I don't know offhand what the number is, but you know it's got to be significant now, where the family is mixed. There's a lot of multiracial families. That kind of puts them in a difficult position, doesn't it?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, my grandson is one of those. And his mother, she's biracial. So, you know, her husband is white, but she's biracial. She's got sisters that are totally black because they're more black. They married black men. They've had black children. So the family looks like a rainbow. But then who are they going to support when they're on Facebook or Instagram or any of these other social media outlets, and they're all screaming racism all the time? So, you know, and then the white portion of that family is hearing it. You know, I always worry about my grandson, who is white as a ghost. He's blonde hair, blue eyes. And, you know, is he hearing from this side of the family, white people bad? You know, and how is he going to feel? And it's a grave concern for me, because these children are hearing this in school. They're hearing it on the school bus, you know, white people bad, white people bad. So what are they supposed to think?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a cultural phenomenon, really, this whole race thing. I've never really been able to understand. You know what it is? This all comes back, Arnetta, to this good and evil fight we talk about all the time. It's just good and evil stuff, because when you look at race like this, and people use the color of your skin position you or to like or dislike you for that purpose, I mean, that's like an argument. You know, that's like somebody who has nothing else to add of any credibility to the conversation, so they go to the race card, right?
It's the rhetoric of the race card, because they have no facts behind it. Experienced that because, well, I used to have a Southern accent. Being around Southern people, it's coming back. But immediately, people assume that I am bigoted towards Blacks because I'm Southern.
I mean, talk about being stereotyped, huh? I mean, it's pretty sad at that point. Yeah, so, Brooke, you know, what we're pointing out here then is, you know, obviously they're doing it because, you know, what are they going to talk about? You can't talk about the economy. You know, you can't talk about foreign policy. You can't really talk about the ISIS conversation. All those things are sort of in control right now. They're not problems for the mainstream political conversation. So there really is nothing going on that's wrong, that's except ourselves. So I guess that's what makes this racism fair game, isn't it?
Well, the other thing is that Trump is such a phenomenon as a Republican, president. They have been able to basically 86 any Republican anywhere at any time simply by calling them a racist, whether it's a politician, whether it's in media, wherever it is, just by doing that, because white people's greatest fear is to be called racist. So you can cow them into submission by doing that. And Trump, it doesn't work against Trump because he's an enigma. He's a phenomenon. And he also understands how important culture is. People want a president who is going to fight back and fight for them. He's up there taking it incoming from every single solitary angle, including from his own party. And he fights back. He not only doubles down, he triples down. And that's, you know, I mean, I make a joke, it's like gangster stuff. He's like a gangster. He's a cultural gangster. And people like that. They don't want, you know, soft country club type Republicans anymore. That's part of the reasons we're in the problem that we're in.
Sure.
And I just think that he has his pulse on the finger. And, you know, it's a different time, and Trump is a different guy. And he's
well, all right, the risk and danger of all of that is this. The risk and danger is that middle America may be believing this stuff. I mean, when you say, well, but Trump is a different kind of politician, and basically, you know, he handles racism differently, or he doesn't really care, but it doesn't matter.
No. I don't think he doesn't care. What I think is that he is calling their bluff. He knows how they operate, and he doesn't. He trusts the people to understand that the media is full of crap.
But isn't this more about middle America and not Trump? Isn't it? Doesn't it matter more what they think?
They're with him. They understand what's going on, though. That's what I'm saying.
Well, you're hoping they're with him. I mean, I don't have concrete evidence. I don't think you do either.
His polling numbers are going up. His numbers within the Republican Party are going up.
So my question then, Carl, let me have you thrown. Are you believing that middle America gets what's going on? Do you think they're falling in line, as Brooke is suggesting? Or do you think that a lot of people, as you suggested, even with the family, are confused? In other words, is the race thing working to at least a part of the population? Are people buying it?
The people that are buying it, like you said earlier, they're very, I think, a small amount, the uneducated, the ones that only listen to their little social media gatherings, things like that. I believe middle America is coming on board with Trump, supporting Trump more. They're so sick and tired of being called a racist, like Brooke said. We're sick of it. I'm sick of it. We're all sick of it. You know, we're not racist. We've got along just great. We watched all the black shows in the 70s and we were getting along just fine. Until, you know, Barack Obama started his divisiveness and things like that is what I believe. And no, I think middle America is now supporting Trump. I think they're just saying, forget this racism, just like Trump is. He's ignoring it. He's saying it's rhetoric. It's just their attacks. It's their way.
Interesting. Yeah.
He won because of Middle America. Don't forget that. He won Blue State.
Well, it sounds like from what we're saying, then, it's another distraction, clearly, that they're using. I think everybody here agrees. I think Arnetta, Bob, both of you agree as well. It's a distraction, right?
It is.
Yep. Circus sideshow. It's exactly, it's the next logical step for, you know, a liberal, because they can't go against, everything's going pretty well.
Right.
He's
That's
handling,
right,
you know, he's kicking ass and taking names across the world.
Yeah.
And his programs are starting to work. So this is all they have left.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, all right. And he's clearly not a racist.
It's not Middle America that I worry about. Well, who I worry about are the ones that get their entertainment and their news from the mainstream media, because they are buying it.
Yes. By the
Middle America. That is Middle America.
Yeah. And well, the coast, it's the big urban areas also.
But all of their ratings are down, so that's good news.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people, the danger is, you know, at some point they've got to know it's either working or it's not working. I mean, clearly we've defined in the last opening part of the show already is that they're using it for purposes because there is nothing else left in their arsenal that they can use, you see? And so this is their weapon of choice, is what you're all saying. And it's a weapon, I guess it's, let's call it this here, people. It's probably a weapon of last choice. I mean, if you've got nothing else to battle with, this is probably there. And, you know, historically, when you look at the left, and I hate to call it out like this, but a fact is a fact, people, they tend to use racism a lot. And they use it when they have nothing else to go to. There's a history of this, actually, people. And so, listen, I know a lot of people don't want to hear this, and certainly our Democrat friends don't want to hear it. But again, as I continue to say to you out there, I want you to invite your Democrat friends in. I want you to invite your moderates in and your people left of the center. It's important we reach these people. So please invite them into the show here, the Voice of a Nation. We'd love to have them on here. Well, listen, let's continue on here with the panel here. And we're going to switch up with another topic here. And we'll pick that up, friends, in just a moment here.
As we say, let the silent voices be heard. Shadow banning, editing, censorship, blocking, and adherence to political correctness are seen as serious threats to our God-given right to free speech. Suppressing free speech, the very cornerstone of our society, is not in the best interest of our listeners, readers, and those who provide our content. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
All right, so we are round two here, hashtag my voice. And so what I want you to do, friends, is use the hashtag out there in social media, hashtag my voice, with a thought or two that you have on the conversations we're having now. I mean, these are things we're talking about that are very important to all of us. And I want to bring up the next one, violent entertainment. And this has certainly been part of the conversation that has been in the our talking points here since we've had these mass shootings, and there's been three serious shootings in the past couple of weeks, people. So let me introduce you now and bring on a new voice here at on the show here, and that is Carl Porfirio. He's the author of My Daddy's Heart is Purple. And that's in memory of his son, and it's dedicated to his grandson. He's a Gold Star dad. It's good to have Carl here with us here. Carl, tell us what's on your heart and what's burning in your soul today, please.
Well, like you said, violent entertainment. I've been a father for over 30 years, and I'm a biological father, a foster father, and an adopted father. And now I'm a grandfather, as well as a Gold Star father. So with that being said, I've had a lot of kids come through my house. And, I didn't want to be totally mean, so I had entertainment systems. But, you know, I believed in my kids playing, you know, Mario Brothers and Mario Kart and things like that. Save the Princess. You don't kill people. You don't go through. I just did not allow violent video games. And I truly, me as one, believe that they really are an effect on these children, especially children who already have problems. They already have a broken home. They already have maybe violence in their neighborhood. Why are people, especially the liberals, who sit here and scream against all these guns and all this violence, but the very people they support is Hollywood? all the liberals support Hollywood and beg for their money, and Hollywood's the one that are bringing out these films that promote all these violent films. Every film has a gun in it, murder, rape, all those things. So they support the very thing that they scream against, and it makes no sense to me.
Yeah,
and these children, now, you know, Tipper Gore, I have to give her credit. She was one thing that I appreciated when she came out with putting the labels on the CDs, you know, saying, you know, graphic language. And I said, you know, this was a good idea because parents aren't going to sit and listen to their kids' rap music or their kids, you know, our grandparents didn't want to listen to Elvis. They thought he was evil, you know, so things like that. And
well, he may not have been evil, Carl, but he was a druggie.
Well, yeah, okay. But they didn't they didn't like his hips gyrating. They thought it was, you know, very influential.
Yeah, I didn't mind the hips gyrating. What I didn't like is the drugs.
Exactly.
But that's another story. Yeah.
Right. And there's a game that you all may be familiar with, in particular, Grand Theft Auto. Mm-hmm. You know, in this game, you're killing hookers, right. And then hookers is a whole nother thing. You know, 11-year-old's going to ask you, what's a hooker? What does a hooker do? Mm-hmm. You know, things like that. Why is an 11-year-old playing this game? They should.
Okay, so Carl, you think these video games are desensitizing the kids, yes?
Absolutely.
All right, let's go around now. Let's bring the panel in here and talk about it here. And Bobby, I want to go to you first. Straight out here. Now talk to me. Are the video games desensitizing the kids, and is it time to do something about it?
Absolutely. Kyle took the words right out of my mouth. Grand Theft Auto. My son used to play it. Okay. I'm like, what the heck are you doing? He's slapping a hooker, taking her money, shooting cops, stealing cars. I'm like, Joey, you know, you like this? Well, yeah, it's funny. But, you know, on the other end of the spectrum, my son is now a law enforcement officer.
And this is,
you know, he's 30-something years old. But it's definitely
– Bob, when you found him had it, did you pull it off of him or did you let him continue to play it?
Well, I can say I let him go because he really was a good kid.
All right. And so you took a chance.
It wasn't like he had a house load of them over. They were all playing it. You know, and this was back in, you know, mid-90s and late 90s. So I said, you know, he's not really doing any harm. He's not acting up. He's doing good in school. Right. Things are all right. He's playing in sports. So it didn't elevate. I kept my eye on him for sure.
But Bob, you were suspect. You were a little suspect, and you were concerned. All right.
Well, to this day, I tweet. I mean, some of these kids think that they can just, you know, because in the games you can get in multiple games, you can get more life, or you can get, you know. Right. You know, energy. It just doesn't work like that.
Well, Bob, it's no different than if you and I or any of us here, we go to a movies and let's say we sit at a movie, Bob, and we watch like a movie with fast cars and they're doing cool stuff, Bob. Right. It's all good. But fast cars, Bob, when you get out into the parking lot and you get in your car and you drive out of the movie theater, tell me that doesn't resonate in your brain.
Oh, I want to do a couple donuts for sure.
I've done it, buddy. Walked out of the parking lot and absolutely.
Not with the children in the car, but by myself, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I leave the kids in the theater and I leave without them. That's the difference here. All right, Arnetta. let's talk about these the videos games now. The violent or not? What do you think? Is it time to? What do we do exactly? And do you think they desensitize the kids? And what do we do about it?
I think it definitely desensitizes them, right down to my son was totally enamored with guns until I took him to a firing range and he fired a rifle and it hurt his ears. And he didn't understand why in the movies people can shoot AK-47s. So he realized that the movies weren't realistic from a very young age. And so it does desensitize them. They lose their empathy when they are constantly bombarded with violence and language and blood and gore. They lose in the touch with reality. So, yes, it desensitizes them.
Now, somebody said earlier, Carl was talking about when he presented the idea, Arnetta, he was talking about the left with the movie, supporting Hollywood, all of that. And I get that. But let me say this, and I want to go over to Brooke here. And Brooke, I want to get your opinion. But here's the challenge, and I don't disagree with what he says there, but there is a flip side to this. the right doesn't want to regulate or ban these video games either. A lot of people on the right don't want to. So it is both sides. I mean, so what is the answer book?
Well, and you're right. The right definitely doesn't like any kind of regulation in that respect. But mm-hmm. one of the things that we're talking about, and I'm going to say this is not one of the subjects, but I also think pornography mm-hmm. and violent video games are very, very intertwined. That's for another day, I'm sure. But what we're talking about is the Band-Aid on the cancer. The societal problems are just accelerated by these kind of video games. There's fatherlessness. I don't remember if it was Bob or Carl that talked about these. All of these mass killers, and I don't like to call them shooters because millions of people shoot and don't kill. But there's a sickness in society. There's a cultural sickness. So what we're talking about is regulating video games, but it goes so much deeper than that. I mean, there's no God in the schools. There's no, you know, there's a dramatic absence of fathers, two-parent households. A lot of the foundational structures that have precluded all this. There's something going around now. Every kid in America had a rifle in their truck. There were no mass killing shootings like this. There's a whole breakdown of society that these games just desensitize, you know, an abortion, I'm going to say it, mass abortion and the lack of respect for life. It's a very, very complex issue. And yes, we can talk about these games. We can talk about Hollywood, and someone mentioned it earlier, the hypocrisy of taking millions, if not billions of dollars in the industry, mm-hmm, including right. actors and actresses who shoot multiple guns and then want to talk about guns are the problems. It's a very, very complex issue, and one regulation of a video game will not do it.
Yeah, right. All right. So, Carl, let's opine back with you on this, and let me say this here. You know, you present the idea out there, you talk about the video, the problem of these and the desensitization, which everybody on the call here believes that this is a problem, that it's impacting the generation and an assortment of other things as well. It's not the only problem, but I've been seeing a lot of people on social media in recent days who are up in arms, a lot of the right, about banning any of that. So here's the tough question for you, and I don't know that you have an answer for this. But who is it we want to regulate these video games? We know there can be hazardous, the Mortal Kombat and the Grand Theft Auto and all these kinds of games here. Do we want government doing it at the federal level, at the state level? Do we want mom and dad doing it? Is it a family problem? How do we regulate them, and how do we be careful of young minds?
Well, mom and dad, absolutely. I agreed with Bobby. You know, Bobby said, you know, he caught his son. But then he had a conversation with them, same as Arnetta, you know, took her son to the range and said, you know, this is the reality of it. And it's mom and dad, absolutely. They have to do it, or the schools or whoever, you know, they have to say to these kids, you know, this is reality. Mm-hmm. And if I may interject, my son, for instance, you know, he was shot in Afghanistan. He suffered greatly. There was a lot of pain. He didn't get to press a reset button, you know, and make everything all right.
Exactly.
You don't get to put reality on pause. Kids watch these games and they put them on pause. They get up and go get a drink and a snack, and they get to come back to their video game. It doesn't work that way in real life. And that's the desensitization, excuse me, of it, in my opinion, because it's not reality.
But Carl, here's the problem with letting the family do it. A lot of families are not going to listen to you. A lot of families, a lot of kids
Correct.
Don't have the guidance. There's a lot of broken homes out there. So what about those?
We just have to keep on. We have to keep on, just the same as I did with the foster children. We just have to keep on with, you know, people, hopefully in churches, hopefully in schools, or in Christian schools, or in better schools that will just keep putting it.
But here's the problem. The part of the population, there's a piece of the population out there. We're onto something right now, my friends, because there's a part of the population, they, again, families, fatherless, as you say, Carl, other problems. They don't have a proper home, whatever it is, but they're not going to follow and listen. So back to those kids who are not going to have that regulated from mom and dad, which is basic discipline we're talking about. You know, you've got to remember with a lot of these mass killers here that are out there, they don't have the families. These come from, a lot of them are fatherless. A lot of them are troubled youth for a lot of reasons. And there's, so even if we regulate at the family dinner table, we're not going to stop them. Bobby, is there any way to stop them? Yes or no? For real.
No, I doubt it. You can put a trailer and a message on the video. He's not going to watch it.
No, it's
the parent, and there's some parents. There again, there's two parents both working. The child can be alone all afafternoon, and that's what they do. Or if single parent just lets their kid dive in.
And Bobby, there are also parents that don't have and I'm going to tell you the truth. There are a lot of parents who have no intellect at all. I mean, I'm serious when I say that you call it whatever you want, call it low class, low brow, low whatever. But there are people who have no brains.
No high tech, sensibilities at all. So they're thinking it's harmless. And those people are very hard to reach. I don't know what the answer to that is, really. I really don't. You can put, a disclaimer on the outside. You can put one in the beginning of the game. I don't think it's going to really help. There's that certain segment that's definitely at risk.
Yeah, I know. Well, what we really need to do is put a disclaimer on the kids somehow. That's what we need to do is put a disclaimer on the kids somehow that this kid could be hazardous to our health. But anyways, I think you see everybody out there. The problem we're talking about in society here, there's never a real big answer to a lot of these things. These are the problems of our lifetime. I mean, no different than, like you say, taking your family to a movie theater or a concert or a theater or an arena or anything and having some active shooter come out and go crazy with a mass killing in a widespread shooting event. Sometimes it's the luck of the draw, and you don't know where you're at. It's what it is today. I was telling you just the other day, you got to look over your shoulder far too often today. Sadly, I know I do, people. If I'm out in any public venue, I'm very suspicious by nature. I've always been that way. I'm not the kind of guy who has my back to the door. Just call me whatever, but that's the way it is today. And today, more so, you have to be that way. So I think it's about preparation for all of us and knowing but can we take some... What are the risks? What are the factors? What are the opportunities? And where do we draw the lines for a decent civilization? We got to get back to that somehow, obviously, here. Well, listen, friends, I want to talk to you a moment, too, in a very serious mode about something I talked to you about last time, and that's our health. I want to tell you one of our sponsors, our big sponsor for this program, this hashtag My Voice, which we're thrilled to bring to you, by the way. And you hear the great conversation and the great voices here. But the sponsor for this show is Healthy Cell. You've heard me talk about Healthy Cell for the last couple of years. Now, I've been taking it for just over a couple of years here. And I love it because there's nothing more important to any of us with any of the conversations we're going to have today than our health. If we don't have our health, we have nothing, my friends. We've all learned that the hard way sometimes, you know. And so the thing about Healthy Cell is it works on the health of your cells. That's most important. So it's about the health of your cells. That's what keeps us young. It keeps us moving forward, and it keeps us vibrant in life. So instead of the nasty multivitamins, I want to encourage you, if you're not taking Healthy Cell yet, what are you waiting for? Do something for you today, will you? Yeah, do something for you. So Healthy Cell, our listeners get 20% off your first order. Only our listeners. You have to use the code OUTLOUD when you go there, or go to healthycell.com/outloud, or the links are right at America Out Loud, friends. You can see the logo or the ad there. Also, there's a special for a sample you can get for free. You'll hear about in the message you're going to hear right now during the break. The Healthy Cell will send you a message, sample product to try for a couple of days. Give it a try, give it a shot, see what you think, and let me know what you're thinking about Healthy Cell. Let's all stay healthy, and let's also keep hashtag my voice out there in the media. You stay right there, and we'll be right back in just a moment here.
Listen to Malcolm, the voice of a nation, on iHeartRadio or our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa.
The question I always get asked is, where do I get the energy from? Well, keeping up with Malcolm Out Loud is no easy task, friends, even for Malcolm. Well, you may know that I've personally been taking Healthy Cell for some time now. Well, the great news is Healthy Cell has a new type of natural supplement called the Nutrition Gel. So no more hard-to-swallow pills. The good-tasting gel can be mixed into smoothies, yogurt, or water. These gels provide maximum absorption of essential nutrients, and it's healthy for our gut, not abrasive like pills can be. You know, it's time for all of us to go pill-free. And you can try it with a free 2-day supply. Just cover $2.95 shipping, and the company, Healthy Cell, will cover the cost of the product. go to healthycell.com/outloud or simply click the Healthy Cell logo at the top of AmericaOutloud.com. Good to be with you here, and we're talking about some pretty hot topics here. Now, next, I want to turn it over to Bob, so brace yourself, and we're going to talk about censorship. And, well, Bob McCarthy, he's a disabled Cold War Marine, a political GOP activist, a founding member of Code of Vets. And, Bob, always love to have you join us and love your voice to be heard here. Tell us what's on your mind with the censorship business.
Well, 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 quite a week I've had. I'm not going to name the platform.
Okay.
But I couldn't tweet for a couple of days. Thanks, Jack. I got.
Wait a minute. Is it Jack or is it Jackass? Which is it?
Jack. Yeah, he's a jackass for sure. 100%. Honestly, I mean, I've had people texting me, calling me, saying they've said far worse on a daily basis multiple times, and they're still out there posting. And I got a notification on my backup California political account that I've had for a year and a half, 2 years, that I used for Aaron Cruz's campaign. I got a little message that you're suspended for trying to evade suspension. And I was like, evade suspension? What the heck are they talking about? So then I go to Twitter, I'm suspended. And it doesn't say why. So I appeal, and then I get just a little message. Oh, it's for hate speech. Well, excuse me. I mean, the things you see these liberals say, mm-hmm. and the gross pictures, the porn, the crap that's on Twitter, you got to give me a break. For what I said, I mean, I could say that to a baby girl, and she'd laugh at me and say, go away, old man. You know what I mean? I don't get it. Well, I get it. It. There again, this is the end run for them. We have them cornered. In so many areas, they're trying to disconnect us. I guess I'm pretty good at what I do because they targeted me, bottom line.
Interesting way to say it, Bobby.
I think remember, we have a person, a friend, the 200. So I'm going to call myself the 201st.
Yeah.
I'm going to take that moniker.
Yeah. Well, listen, you are a patriot among patriots, my friend. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And it's sad, as you say, that we're having this conversation. I've been very suspect on all the social media outlets for some time now and very concerned for where this is all going, back to this whole censorship. In fact, you'll hear one of the top of the hour segments I do on America Out Loud talk about shadow banning and censoring, and that we do not support that by any stretch of the imagination. Our free speech is a God-given right, and we should be able to use it accordingly. And so any social media outlet that wants to do that probably is not worth our time. The problem is the left owns all the social media outlets. And that is the problem. Hey, Carl, first time you and I have talked today on the program here. It's a joy to meet you here. But I want to ask you right out, because I've questioned many of people and nobody's had an answer for me. And maybe you'll give me maybe shine some light on this potentially. I don't know, but I can't get an answer from anybody. Why does the left own everything? Why do they own all the television stations, all the newspapers, all of the social media outlets, all of the universities and education systems? Why do they own all the mass media? Why are they so bright they figured it out before the conservatives did? Do you know why?
Well, I want to say this, and I don't want it to sound anti-Semitic, but if you look back in the entertainment industry, because I always, you know, I watch classic cartoons, the old things, and, you know, many, many Jewish people, you know, Mr. Mayer, and started in the entertainment business. So therefore, if they're all going to vote Democrat, but then all the Jewish people started in the entertainment business, and a lot of the entertainers are also Jewish. So you think, who do they support? So I think that in my, you know, I hate to say the name Weinstein, but I think, in my opinion, since they're so supportive of it and they're the ones that create most of that, I think that has a lot to do with it.
All right. Arnetta, what do you think about that? I mean, Carl puts out there.
Well, I think he's absolutely right. It's based on fact. I mean, you can go back to the money lenders. It's a lot of Jewish people don't support the Democrats, but the wealth and the bankers and the family through the generations handing down the wealth are from the Jewish background. And I, you know, it's not a reflection on being Jewish. It's just where their interests lie. It's like the mills in the South were basically started by Jewish members that came to this country and settled. It was their talent. They were the ones that had the early education. They were taught math, writing, and reading when many weren't. So it starts way back in history. But it's
evolved. Will this change with the Jewish people, do you think?
I think it will. Yes, it already is, Malcolm. It already is. But those roots are deep. And the ownership of the media and the social media and the banks, it's still there. And unfortunately, I have been in the temple and heard rabbis preach against Republican candidates during elections. So I don't understand it at all, but it's there.
And when you see what the president has done in support of the Jewish community, you just have to shake your head and wonder how anybody can't see this. And back to big money. So you're saying, to stay on task here, what you're saying and what you both have put out there is that big money is supported the left agenda quite a bit and have supported a lot of these. So that's the answer you both. And I haven't heard that before. That's the first time I've heard of that, Carl, and you've put out there. Are you agreeing with that, Brooke? Do you buy that?
I don't know about that particular issue. I will just address the censorship issue. I actually have a new Twitter account because my old Twitter account was suspended and is still suspended. And there's no recourse whatsoever. You can't call. You can't, you know, you can petition them via email, but it really doesn't matter.
Brooke, what did you do?
Well, come on,
Malcolm. Confession time, young lady. Tell us what you did.
You know, Brookie's got a big mouth. One of the things, well, okay, so I didn't have my picture. Now I have the back of my head. But anyways, I love.
Yeah.
Thank you. I didn't have my picture, so a lot of there were people that would call me a bot. And I'm like, just because you don't like what I say doesn't mean I'm a bot, asshole. Anyways, but I would, you know how I drop my article, like I pimp my article out, so to speak, everywhere I possibly can. And they considered that was one of the things. They considered that trolling activity, like bot activity, because it was automated. The other thing is, you know, I tend to, like I'll be dropping memes, nasty memes in different people's places and stuff. And you know how the snowflakes... someone mentioned it earlier. You know, these snowflakes can say the most vile, disgusting, rude, nasty things to conservatives, but we're not supposed to, you know, we're not supposed to say anything back. We're not supposed to fight back. And this is one of the things, you know, back to all of these subjects, is this has got them so upset, is because they have someone, you know, first it was Trump and now it's the Trump army, and we are sick and tired of it. We're fighting back, we're funny, we're smart, we're subversive, we're nasty, we're all of that, and we are fighting back, and we don't care. And there was an article written just really quickly, is that they understand that we are actually better at memeing and comebacks than they are, which is ironic to me, I can't believe it.
Hallelujah, we are.
Yes, but the other thing that's very important, and this is the good news, you know, Malcolm, always you like to hear about some good news.
Yes, ma'am.
And this is very important because I talk about culture. There really is a tremendous growing coalition of all of these quote-unquote identity groups that are sick of the left because they're realizing they've been manipulated and used for votes and ballot cattle. They are on the Trump train, and it's not being talked about so much because, you know, they don't want it to be out there. You are going to see something earth-shaking, and they know it, and they are terrified. Black and white together for conservatism is the left's absolute greatest fear.
Okay, all right. Bob, last point, take 30 seconds, wrap up, because you started this with censorship. Give us your last thought on what do we got to do about censorship?
Well, I did just see President Trump was talking about it today, and I don't know if he saw my situation or just the whole thing. There might have to be, you know, FCC jump in there or an executive order ordering people, the IG, to investigate why the liberals get a free walk on everything. And it seems to be they have to have data somewhere. Mm-hmm. How many people are being thrown off Twitter? How many are being thrown off Facebook?
Right.
All these other things. 8chan. 8chan is an old, wicked old platform. I actually had a friend just told me they used that years ago when it was first started. And it's irrelevant now. But now they come out and they say, well, that's where the racists go. It's just that they're really plastering, pushing on all cylinders to take us out, to disconnect us. So we need the president or the Congress, Senate to step in and do something because it's out of control.
Yeah, well, it's going to be the fight of a lifetime right now. And just so everybody's aware, what's going on right now with this conversation with tech companies and social media in general, but also Google, Google Search, all the social media companies and the large tech companies, even Apple and Microsoft, they all are going to be looked at, and there's talk. I mean, even people on the right who normally don't want regulation, quite frankly, are now talking about regulation. So sadly, some things you may have to do that. You know, remember years ago, people, we broke up Ma Bell and that whole conversation. Of course, she came back stronger than ever is what happened there. But again, it's like anything, you break the legs and arms off and sometimes they grow back like one of those wicked insects, right? But really, that's what we could have here. I don't know. But something's going to have to be done. You know, where the rules have changed is that technology has changed. And it's changed the way we act, the way we are, the way our life is, the way we think, and clearly, people, the way we interact with each other. So something's going to have to give on this front, no question about it. All right, so what we've done so far here is hashtag my voice. We spoke to you about white supremacy. We spoke about the violent entertainment censorship just now. And the next thing is kind of a really interesting topic to bring it all together to a head, and it's confrontation. It's really, you know, I hear a lot of people these days talking about using the words, and sometimes and not casually, but civil war. And is it ready for that? And that's the conversation we're going to have next right now. And let me bring on here Arnetta Notkin. So Arnetta, well, spent 30 years working on Wall Street. She's a guru in many, many likes, huh? She's a producer and commentator here at America Out Loud. And let me just say what a really awesome panel and group of people here with Brooke, Carl, Bob, and Arnetta here. I'm really enjoying all of this conversation because you can learn so much in between all of this, and that's really the key to all of this. All right, Arnetta, confrontation. Let me give you the floor, and tell us why that's a big problem, why that's a concern for you today.
Well, Malcolm, thank you. To me, we, meaning anyone who is not a globalist radical despot, is feeling the actual physical feverish pitch of now their hatred. It was rhetoric before. It was, had a script, they had a script, they were sticking to the script. But now it has gained that mob mentality that most of the people who are reacting to it don't even know why they're reacting to it, but they're feeling it. And we are feeling that hatred to the point that it is physically affecting people, and they are beginning to have a sense of doom. They're losing that positive outlook, that positive perspective, because it is so vicious and just vehement. For even the ones that have the ability to look behind it and recognize it for what it is, which is a distraction, an obfuscation of what are they trying to hide? What is coming up? What are we being set up for? If you'll notice, all of the negative news headlines that were aimed at and the Democrats were responsible for, whether it's Epstein or the corruption in the FBI or the DOJ, even down to the seventh largest bank in England is propping up China's currency. All of those headlines have disappeared with all these talking points of hatred, and it's in our face. So the question begs, what are they doing? Why are they doing this? It's no longer about being a conservative or some of the, it's Trump supporters they have declared war on.
All right. Let's have Brooke answer that. Brooke?
Well, I agree in the sense, and it's not just Trump supporters in America. It's freedom. The word you use, Arnetta, globalist, it's freedom versus tyranny. It's centralized government versus individual freedom.
Good point.
And it's all over the world. It's Brexit. It's Italy. It's Brazil. It's Eastern Europe. They have declared war on us. And by the way, it's not just Democrats, it's both parties. The problem is that the Republicans have been able to get away with a lot of stuff too. And so I do think that that's, you know, that's something that is brewing, but freedom wins. You know, and that's why, you know, that's why it's so important not to surrender our Second Amendment. And they want to disarm us because they know that we are joining together and we're fighting back. And Trump is a figurehead who is allowing the other figureheads. You know, he has the keys to the file room, people. The deep state, the government, that $4.2 trillion trough in Washington, the five richest counties surrounding Washington, he knows where all of it is. And by the way, in his 72 years of life, he's met all those people in Hollywood, New York, Washington, sober.
Let me ask Carl something on what Brooke says there. Carl, do you think with what Brooke puts out there, quite fascinating, do you think that that potentially is the reason they were so panicked with Donald Trump coming into power? Because let's face it, Carl, here's a man who never ran for political office before, and he didn't really, you know, he was kind of like stealing their thunder a moment, you know, like playing their game. And the fact that he won it all really ripped a lot of them off. With what she puts out there, with all those secrets in the deep state, we all know there definitely is a deep state alive and well. Do you think that's why they were so scared of Trump?
Absolutely. He has shaken them to the core. He's a businessman. He's not a politician. He reminds us that every day. That's what we love about him. You know, we've said this for years. We need a businessman and not a politician. Yeah. You know, we had this in ancient Rome. They destroyed themselves. And I believe, you know, if Hillary got elected, I mean, her objective was to take away our guns, to absolutely eliminate the Second Amendment, to take all our guns away. You know, they were going to do it through the UN and just disarm us because they're so afraid. They're just so, so afraid, as Brooke says. And I believe it. I believe it 100%.
Wow. It absolutely makes you think. Trump was sort of more or less the catalyst, if you will, Bob, that has really got the deep state running on overtime, would you say?
Oh, definitely. I mean, they loved the man when he was building hotels and built Atlantic City, when he went out to Hollywood and joined all the weirdos out there that that make money. But the political side of it, they were worried about him because you can't blackmail a guy that has no vices. His only vice is to golf. His only passion right now is to save America because he knows all these crackpots, like you said. The country club mentality of the Republicans to allow this behavior to go on, and they've been complacent. They've joined in it, quite a few of them, and to slow walk us towards the old days. Like, we had history growing up. You know, there was serfs, and there was the kingdom owners, the kings, and there was the knights, and all the baloney that comes down to it. They want to have rich people and poor people. They don't want a middle class. They do want to cleanse the earth of people like us with a mind, with a brain, and with thoughts of moving forward for humanity. They don't want humanity. They all want, they're greedy. And to me, it's satanically rooted, and it has deep roots in England, Europe. All the English kings come from Germanic, which my mother was 100% German. She'll hate me for this, but they're tied into Europe. They're tied into the Vatican. They're tied into Hollywood. Hey, I'm from Boston. The Mafia used Shylocks. You know what a Shylock is? It's a Jewish bookkeeper. So notoriously for years, the Jewish bookkeepers, they're tight lip. They don't squeal. They do their job. They take their cut. You know, so touch on many topics. We have a big job ahead of us. We're doing really well. These things that have been going on now the last few weeks, it's their end game because they know Trump has done some amazing, amazing things. If he releases all the classified stuff, it will cause problems with other nations that are our supposed allies.
Right.
Everyone spies on each other, but they've been stealing from us for years. Right. Britain's been trying to take us back for years. Since 1800, they've been trying to take us out still. They never gave up.
Yeah. So. Well, you say a lot there, Bobby. You say a lot there. But the tone of all of that, Arnetta, is that we're living in historical times, you see. And you hear me say that a lot, but there's a lot of truth to that, Arnetta, because as we, you know, when these next generations look back, this is going to be a pivotal time. So in a kind of interesting sort of way, Arnetta, we are all blessed to be living at this moment of time, because it is truly, truly historical what's going on right now. This fight that we started with when we started The Voice of a Nation, Arnetta, which was the fight of good versus evil, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. And I question, you know, we've gotten complacent, we've gotten successful, we've gotten rich, and we've gotten fat. So my question is, do we have the fortitude to stop what is trying to run over us? And is it too late to stop? Because we have a lot of guns, but if a law person shows up at your door and threatens you and your family, are you going to stand up to them and sacrifice that in order to save the Constitutional Republic and the next generations?
Good question to put out here. Are you going to? Friends, Carl, are you going to?
Very good question. I say this to my son all the time. When you're faced with the reality, you know, what are you going to do? I guess because I'm older, yes, I'm going to defend my republic. I am absolutely going to defend my republic, and I'm going to go down dying, screaming, God bless America. So,
yeah, interesting. And Bobby, I'm sure you are as well, right?
Well, I grew up in Boston, which was you have to you go through various hoops to get a gun in Boston. My ex-mother-in-law, my first wife's mom, wouldn't allow it in her house. I respected that. When I moved out, I got myself a pistol. And then up here in New Hampshire, I've got more toys because you don't have to register them. It's not mandated. You All right. should tell your
So you're ready to fight for what's coming next. Brooke, how about you?
I got a 50 cal on my Corolla, honey. I'm ready to go.
She's ready to go.
Well, let's roll.
All right, there. Let's roll. All right. Well, Arnetta, there is your answer right there, right? That's your answer.
Yeah.
You just got it. So I think this group is ready to fight here. So, well, listen, hashtag my voice. It hardly gets any better than to open it up like this and to really get some thoughts from the people. I love this. I love being able to do it. And just to really see what people are thinking. And, you know, I always ask the question of people, what's in your heart? What's in your soul? As a point of truth, as a point of speaking, like, what's your out loud truth? You see, that's what that means, really. What's your out loud truth? And it's what's in our hearts, what's in our souls, what's our burning desire for? I continue to say to you, it is a fight beyond, it's a historical fight, and it's a fight of good versus evil, clearly. And that's the fight that you hear. What great conversation. You hear Bob bring it all the way back to our early settlers in Europe and all of that. He's got a lot of points there. Now, some people would say that's a conspiracy. Well, life is a conspiracy now, isn't it, people? Huh? It's all what you're making. It's all what you think. You know, the other thing I want to leave you with a point here is it's all important what we put into our minds and our brains also is what we put into our hearts and our souls. I want to remind you to be careful of that, please. It's a very violent world out there. And again, with this good and evil fight, and there's a lot of vitriol, but a lot of fight out there on social media as well. I want to encourage everybody out there, including the people on this call here today, is to continue to take the high road, please. Take the high road. You can win on the high road, as somebody just said a moment ago. We're up for the challenge. We're going to win. But, you know, but calling somebody a dirty SOB or names, that's not going to get you anywhere. And what's happening is you're feeding right into the social media pirates. And the social media pirates are going to take you out. It's because they own it. They own it. They bought it. Call it whatever you want. How about we have a higher voice, a higher calling? Let's fight them, but let's win on the side of good, not evil. That's my message today, people. Let's take it to the good fight. We'll win with that, and that's, I think, the fight that God Almighty wants us to take forward. Just remember that, please. There's a message here. Hashtag my voice. Get it out there, people. Let's talk about this. The voice of a nation here. It is always good to be in your company here, and we thank you for being part of the journey here. It's time to get involved and get loud.